You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today.
Hello and welcome to the Effective Statistician Podcast. My name's Alan Bedding, and in this podcast I explore topics that can help a statistician become more effective. Today I'm joined by my good friend Richard Zink from JUMP, who I've had the pleasure of knowing for a long time. I'm going to let Richard introduce himself in a minute, but I just want to say that we're going to be discussing a topic which the listeners may think at first, well, what's that got to do with becoming an effective statistician or becoming an effective leader? And that's applied improvisation. And I personally have done some applied improvisation in coaching. And so this is a topic that's dear to my heart. Richard also has a pre-conference workshop at the PSI conference this year. And I'm sure that the conversation we're having is going to inspire people to register for that conference. So, hello, Richard. Maybe we can start by you just giving a brief introduction to yourself to the listeners.
Thanks for having me, Alan, and happy to be here. Yeah, I'm Richard Zink. I have been a professional biostatistician and software developer for more than 20 years. And yeah, I'm here to talk a little bit about applied improv, how we got into it, and how it's useful for statisticians. If you'd have asked me 8 years ago if I'd have ended up where I am, I probably would have laughed at you. But now that I'm here, it does seem kind of natural. In trying to work with statisticians and data scientists, and I guess scientists of all stripes, introducing them to applied improv and learning useful skills, but having a lot of fun while doing it.
So maybe you can tell me about that story. How did you get into improv and then realize this is something that we can do as statisticians, as leaders?
Starting off, I've always been a fan of improv, and I was a huge fan growing up of Whose Line Is It Anyway? I started watching the British version on Comedy Central when I was in high school, and I always thought it was hilarious. I was always amazed at how they could just come up with this stuff off the top of their head, and I never really thought about it much beyond that, other than just a way of trying to be funny or entertaining. And I think maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I don't remember the exact year, but I was listening to a podcast, the WTF podcast with Mark Maron, and he was having an interview discussion with Alan Alda, who's an actor. Famously in MASH, and he hosted Scientific American Discoveries for a long time, and he was talking about how scientists, when hosting this show, he would have these discussions with scientists, and he'd be really interested in what they were saying. It was very understandable and relatable, and then the camera would go on, and then they would go into full-on scientist mode, and what he thought he understood, he had no idea what was happening anymore. I guess in reflecting over the course of many years, he sort of discovered or thought about how the skills of applied improv would be really useful for scientists. And hearing this podcast, it's kind of weird that, introduced to this idea of something that I thought about purely from a comedic standpoint, but now learning useful skills in terms of thinking on your feet and leadership and communication, it sort of, I felt like I had permission now to learn applied improv. And so I looked for a course locally, and there was a comedy group near the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and they had a lot of courses, improv for business people, improv for this sort of group of people. And I asked if you ever thought about an improv for scientists class, and probably that email said, yeah, sure we do. And they formed an improv for scientists class. There was maybe a dozen different kinds of scientists, and that started my journey with it. And I've been doing it ever since.
And I reflected on my journey into improv. I didn't attend an improv class, but I was always amazed by it on the TV. And then there was an advert went out for a course called Coaching with Presence. And that is all about improv. It's a fantastic course or fantastic workshop. It's a day workshop. And we just do improv all day. And what that's teaching you is that you're in the moment, you're being present, you maintain that presence with the person you're being, because you'll know from an improv perspective, you can't think, oh, what am I going to say next? You just step in and say it. And you say what's coming up for you in the moment. You talked about thinking on your feet. And I think that's one of the massive things that improv actually teaches you.
Yeah, absolutely. I know this is a highly scripted conversation that we're having right now. That's an improv joke. But yeah, the idea that you can put yourself in any situation, and you develop this confidence in yourself that I can go into any situation, I can have a conversation, I can react appropriately, and, you know, figure out where things need to go. But it's not just about thinking about where you need to go. A lot of the idea of improv is figuring out how to go someplace with other people. So figuring out how to go there together, developing and practicing listening skills and support of other people. I think I've really grown to appreciate this idea of making it a journey for the team or the group, and not just about yourself, giving every idea a chance to shine and letting all of those things happen organically in the presence of a group or whatever ideas that people share and throw out there. I think it's pretty remarkable where you can end up.
Yeah, and I like that bit where you talked about it's not just about you, it's about you in partnership with others. And I reflect on what that is about coaching, it's about a partnership. And yeah, one of the principles we were taught by improv is to make your partner look good. So you're not about, it's not all about you, it's about actually working together and picking up the conversation where it left off.
Probably the one thing that people hear about improv is this idea of yes and, this concept that if somebody makes an offer to you, that you'll not just accept it, but with the yes aspect of it, you'll accept it, but then build upon it. And when you think about it, that applies to any conversation. You ask someone a question like, are you enjoying the weather today? If they just respond yes or no, that kind of effectively shuts down the conversation. So it's this not only just responding, but also adding to it to keep the conversation going. I think that concept of yes and is certainly one of the more famous ones. And the one that I've really grown to appreciate even more is this concept of got your back. Use improv a way of improving my interpersonal skills, but I also perform as well. I think maybe, I don't know if people think that, oh, if I'm doing improvisation, I have to perform. You don't, but it's also great practice. But one thing when you perform with other people is this idea of I've got your back. And this is this ritual I really love before performances, where if you're going to go out in front of a group of people, you have no idea what they're going to suggest. You have no idea where things are going to go. You have no idea if you're going to be funny or entertaining. But before we go out there, everybody pats every other person on the back and says, I've got your back. And it's this sort of verbal acknowledgement and commitment to each other that we don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to do everything I can to make you look good. And I hope you're going to do the same for me. And I think that's very powerful.
Yeah, I love the idea of you've got your back, because that implies a certain amount of togetherness. with everything. You mentioned something there about being funny and being entertaining. And I know a lot of people will go, because whose line is it anyway? It is amusing. I know people will think, oh, God, if I've got to do some applied improv, I've just got to be funny. But I don't think that's the case. I think you've just got to be yourself and be there in spirit and then, you know, have that presence. It doesn't mean you have to be cracking jokes every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. There's a lot about improv. It's really just showing up with your authentic self. That can be funny. That can be serious. You could be vulnerable, but it's really just this idea of putting yourself out there, putting your ideas out there and responding to other people accordingly. So I try to make it really clear that the goal of what we're trying to do today isn't trying to be funny. The goal isn't trying to make each other laugh. That being said,
that happens.
It happens naturally, and we always end up in these bizarre places where things are exceedingly funny and often from the people you expect it from the least. But it's not about being funny. It's about learning to communicate more effectively with other people and learning to think about how we interact in very unique and different ways.
So tell me more about how this became a workshop, how you became to be teaching this as a workshop.
So I'm going to let our dirty little secret as statisticians is that we're not particularly extroverted, and extroverted or introverted, the bottom line is we don't get a lot of training in interpersonal or communication skills. And that's just the facts. And just in reflecting on people who develop a lot of really cool ideas, really a lot of technical ideas, even if you develop all this really great technical stuff, if you don't communicate it and you don't share it, and you don't advocate for it, you've created all of this technical stuff that effectively goes nowhere. So I think for me, in thinking about what can I do with this material, I feel like I've gotten a lot out of it. It's just morphed over time into this idea. I want to share these kinds of ideas with other quantitative scientists, and thinking about communication and how we interact with one another. And I think also too, when you talk about leadership and communication topics with people, they're like, they think about it in this very, and you're like, oh, we're going to talk about leadership, or we're going to talk about communication. And our minds are probably thinking, that sounds pretty dull and awful, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. And I think that's one of the cool things about improv, is that we're playing a bunch of games. And in the process of playing these games, we're actually learning really valuable lessons, really valuable skills. Basically, all of this theoretical textbook-like stuff that we could read from any book chapter or article, like, we're putting it into practice. We're doing it. And I think that's really cool. Yeah, I've been trying to, within the last few years, train other statisticians and data scientists, or at least introduce it to them, so that if they have an interest in developing it further, they can explore other local opportunities.
Yeah, it sounds, I remember when I've done the coaching with presence now 3 times. That's how much I love it. And I learn something new every time I do it. But there's very little coaching on it. It's similar to what you're talking about. I guess when you do the improv for leaders and statisticians, it's not about, are we going to go and communicate some statistical topics in the improv session? It's actually, no, we're learning something new that we can then take outside and do and use in our everyday lives, as opposed to we do it on the workshop itself.
What you said is really interesting, like learning something every time you do it. And I think that's the really interesting thing about doing a workshop. You're in a room with a small group of other people, and because everything's happening spontaneously and you're reacting to the people in the room, like, each and every person is bringing their experience, their knowledge, their skills, their funny comments, and all of that gets mixed together. And yeah, I haven't done it many more times than you, but yeah, each and every time I've done it, like, I've learned something new, and it's made me think about things in very different and interesting ways that I can take to the next course and the course after that. So yeah, I may be the ringleader trying to manage the chaos, but it's this chaos that we're creating together that I think is really pretty cool.
It's like organized chaos.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting. I did a workshop recently with MMA on leadership stuff, and in the communications bit, we did a little bit of online improv. And I've got to be honest, I'd never done it online before. And we improv the improv. I had a plan. And I thought, oh, this is what I'm going to do. But it actually didn't happen like that. Things just happened organically. I had no idea where it was all going. But it worked really well. And everybody got involved. It was just brilliant. So I don't know what that even relates to. But, you know, just example of where you can actually do it online. I think people think, oh, no, it has to be in person. But no, you can do this sort of stuff online as well.
I think when the world shut down due to COVID in 2020, there were a whole lot of groups and people, myself included, who were taking classes or working with teams or performing. And they're like, what do I do now? I can't interact face to face with people. A lot of people really dug into and explored online improvisation. And there's certainly a lot of modifications you have to make. And there's certain exercises that may or may not be as successful online, but I do think it opens up some different possibilities that you may not necessarily be able to do face to face. So there are a whole lot of people who offer improv training online. And you were talking about, how do I learn this stuff? Where do I learn it from? And I had been doing improv and I was looking to take that next step of, how do I figure out about how do I start creating material or organizing material? And that's a lot harder to find, but I found this online course. They call it Train the Trainer. So learning how to create your own workshops. And so for 2 full weekends, I did this Train the Trainer course where we talked about the fundamentals, and then we had to create our own 1-hour program that we then offered to all the other people in the course and to people who could randomly join from outside the course. And yeah, it was really useful, but I have yet to go back to the online stuff because I'm really enjoying the in-person connection. I know we're talking online right now, and
but that's because you're in the US and I'm in the UK. It would be fantastic if we did do this in person.
Yeah, that's the great thing. Like when I took the class, there was someone from New Zealand. There was someone who was in Peru, people on the West Coast. You can do it with people from all across the world. And I can certainly appreciate the ability to do that. But I don't know if this was something I didn't really know about myself, just how absolutely important it was for me to have these face-to-face and in-person interactions and this whole virtualization of work and interacting with people. I really struggle with it. I really appreciate and want to interact with people face-to-face and have these connections. But yeah, online or in person, these types of skills can definitely be learned.
And I mentioned at the start of this episode that you're doing this workshop at the PSI conference. Now, I'm a listener. I'm sitting there listening. I'm really interested in this, Richard. But what can I expect for this workshop at the PSI conference?
I think this will be the 3rd major conference that I've offered this class, and it is a unique offering. The typical class is you go into a room, you hear a bunch of experts give technical material at the end of the course, you go on your way. And I think the thing that's unique about this is that we're going to be interacting with each other, we're going to be doing different exercises. And in doing that, we start out with the basics, introducing who each person is, what their experience is, and learning some details about each other, likes and dislikes, those kinds of things. And so that's typical in an improv course and workshop, because part of being an effective communicator is making yourself vulnerable and listening, sharing details with yourself. And so we start out there, and then a series of exercises and just getting used to thinking on our feet, practicing listening, practicing supporting people, being willing to make ridiculous noises or body motions. But even after we do all of these exercises, even the ones that seem like there's no benefit to them, we have a discussion afterwards and talk about what did we do? What just happened? How does these skills seem like they're useful in the workplace or in everyday life? So I think that's a little taste of what people can expect. To give you a specific example, there's one exercise that I've really grown to love. It's called gibberish. And
I've done this myself. So yeah, this is brilliant.
Yeah. So gibberish is an exercise where you pick two people and you give them a situation and they need to act out this situation, but they don't speak in normal words. They just say whatever random gobbledygook comes to their mind. And so the way I've done it in class is that what people are actually doing is a secret. And after the participants do their scene, we ask all the other people what just happened in this scene. And almost every single time, just based on the body language, based on the emotion, based on how people are interacting, almost every single time they're able to guess word for word what that scene was about. And so what does that tell you? We can communicate an awful lot without saying a single word. That might seem obvious on the surface. And I had this aha moment talking to the class about this. Look at how much we're able to communicate. So if I'm up in the front of a room or I'm giving a presentation and I look bored or I look annoyed, my boredom and my annoyed attitude is going to be communicated to the people I'm trying to interact with. And they're going to respond accordingly, either turning their brains off, going to their laptops, saying, what's this guy talking about? So understanding that is really important. And as I'm explaining this to the students and saying, look at how much we're communicating, I had this epiphany, like when my wife tells me what's wrong and I say nothing, like she absolutely knows something is wrong because my body is basically screaming at it at the top of its lungs. So I'm like, okay. So even though I know that fundamentally, like in that moment and having that moment with the class, like, oh yeah, I'm not fooling anybody. I'm absolutely communicating that. So I may as well just be open and honest and say what's on my mind. So I think those kind of lessons, when you're doing it, even if you're doing something silly or not really related to work, I think they're very powerful and it allows you to think about things in a new and unique way that you can take home and use in everyday life. You can take home and use when you're talking with your students or your coworkers.
Yeah, and thinking about in the workplace, if you're in the pharmaceutical industry, for example, you might be talking to a medic who actually you might be speaking gobbledygook to them. But if you're trying to explain something and your body language is saying something positive, they're going to be more engaged and they're going to be more willing to ask a question or to challenge you on certain things, but in the right way, as opposed to being some aggressive challenge. And the gobbledygook, I love it. I've still got it in my head now when I did that in person with somebody, and it was just brilliant doing that. Almost like the Mork and Mindy type of language that we did. It was just absolutely hilarious. So I get that one. The other one that I've done several times is it's called The Story That Will Never Be Told Again. And so you get everybody in the class, you say, okay, give us a scenario. And then you start from one side to the start to the finish. And a person walks in to the story where they think their piece will fit in well. And what you get then is a whole story that fits together. That at first it doesn't make any sense, but when everybody's there, it's just hilarious. And it could be if you think to yourself, oh, I'm going to step in now and do my point now. And you have to step in at the right time, because if you step in too early, you've got to remember your piece for ad nauseum, because you carry on repeating the piece as other people come in. And if you make it too complicated, then again, you won't be able to remember what you've got to say. So you've got to make it distinct and understandable, and so you can remember it as well. But it's a great one that we do every time at the end of the workshops.
Yeah, that is a fun one. And what you said was really important. Keeping it simple, making things memorable. I think that's certainly a lesson that we can learn especially when we're dealing with non-statisticians. So clinician example you were giving before, like how can we share statistical ideas in a way that other people can embrace and keep it simple enough that they can remember it or repeat it to somebody else? Yeah, there's a ton of exercises just on the idea of simplifying things and trying to do it in a brief period of time. Just so much fun.
I love this idea of simplifying things. That really resonates with me, particularly my brain. But I love the idea of simplification, simple statements, simple questions, simple answers. Somebody else can remember.
And the point you brought up too about the clinical colleague and them interpreting your body language as potentially being hostile or aggressive or unenthusiastic, just in learning ourselves and how to interpret people's body language and or their face and how they're reacting to things. And if they're looking at you or behaving in a certain way, like my message isn't landing with this person based on how they're looking at me quizzically or just their body language. It's like you're giving a presentation to a crowd. I don't know how other people do it, but there's always a couple faces in the crowd that I see who are really paying attention. And those are the ones that I tend to return to as I'm giving a talk, because I know they're paying attention and just they serve as a good gauge because they are paying attention. And if I say something that doesn't make sense or hasn't landed, I can tell from their face that it hasn't. So I can maybe add a little bit more detail or say it in a different way. But yeah, that's the cool thing about it. I think that it all really just comes down to communication and how we're interacting with one another. And
yeah. And actually, you just sparked something in me that doing improv has probably improved my presentation skills as well, because I have no fear of standing up there in front of an audience. I probably didn't have that much fear before, but I've got even less fear now, because when you do improv, you're going to fail. At some point, whether fail is the right word, but you're going to make a mistake. Something's going to happen. And these days when I step up in front of an audience, and if I make a mistake, I'll just, I've made a mistake. We'll move on. Most of the time, they probably won't realize you made a mistake.
Let me ask you, talking about your confidence, I don't know if you ever suffered from imposter syndrome or being too hard on yourself. Do you feel like improv has helped with that?
I did an episode of The Effective Statistician talking to myself about imposter syndrome. And we all have imposter syndrome at some point. I know I've had imposter syndrome at various different points in my career. And even when I left the corporate world, I had this imposter syndrome. Well, who am I to start my own business and become a coach outside of what I was doing before? So yeah, I think we all suffer from that imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Prior to, I think it was when I took the Effective Statistician course, which this was probably back in 2017 and 2018, when we're talking about what are your long-term goals? What do you want to do for yourself? And I listed out the obvious, doing this task or that task, or climbing this mountain, whatever. But the one thing I did, I saved those goals and I revisit them every so often. And the one thing I wrote down that I'd forgotten about was addressing or working on my imposter syndrome. It's so weird that people, in being so capable, think about these things or so self-critical. But yeah, I saw it. And when I looked back at these goals recently and thought about imposter syndrome, it was like, it really felt like more of a non-issue to me. I can really only think of the improv I've been doing over the last 7 or 8 years that has really maybe addressed that. And I think it all just comes down to this confidence that I can go into a situation now and not fall flat on my face. Or even if I do fall flat on my face, who cares? Pick myself up, dust myself off, and keep going. But yeah, I feel like the volume on that has been turned not all the way down to zero, but it's been turned way down. And I think that by itself has been really helpful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we talked about the workshop coming up, and I'll put a link in the show notes to that workshop. If people want to get a hold of you outside of the workshop, what's the best way to contact you?
There's always LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. I've been on LinkedIn for a while. Happy to connect with anybody. Certainly there's my email, and I can give you an email address that you can maybe put in the podcast notes. I'm happy to talk to people about improv or other things, data visualization or other professional topics, just random leadership topics. I could talk about improv until the wheels fall off the car, but yeah, connecting through LinkedIn or email, certainly.
And the one last thing, I always ask a question of my guests who I have on the podcast as to if you could give the audience one tip, and I'm going to ask you one tip around improv here, but if you could give people one tip, what would that tip be?
You brought up the idea of mistakes, making a mistake. And there was certainly a point in my life where I was so petrified and terrified of making a mistake that it almost led to a sort of paralysis in just doing anything. And it took a long time to recover from that. But I think if you think of mistakes as the best learning opportunity, that if you truly make a mistake, you're going to learn from it and you're going to become an expert in how not to do that again. But we often throw around the idea of I made a mistake, I think, a little bit too much. I think oftentimes what we say we've done is a mistake isn't necessarily a mistake, but it's something we could have done better, right? So we can always do something better with enough time, enough resources, sufficient amount of thinking. So always possible to do a better job. Whether or not something is truly a mistake or not, it's questionable. But I would have people think about that. But Tina Fey, who's an American improviser, Saturday Night Live, wrote the book Bossy Pants, a really famous comedian, she talks about the idea of mistakes as being opportunities. So even if things don't go as planned, go south, oftentimes those quote-unquote mistakes take us in really new or interesting directions. We just need to be open to the possibilities of potentially going in those new and interesting directions. So I would think, just reflect on whether or not what you're actually doing is a mistake, but yeah, don't let the fear of making one keep you from doing anything else.
I love that. Don't let the fear of making a mistake stop you from almost like carrying on. Love it. So with that, Richard, big thank you. I know the audience will learn an awful lot from this podcast, and fingers crossed, I would encourage people, if you're really interested in the whole improv, then register for Richard's workshop at the PSI conference. So thank you very much, Richard.
Thanks for having me, Alan. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about improv and talk about the course. And yeah, if nothing else, you'll have an entertaining 4 hours with a group of fellow statisticians. Even if you decide to never, ever do it again, it will be a whole lot of fun for 4 hours.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Thank you very much. And goodbye, listeners.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS to help with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.